Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Kim Stessel, and I am very happy to be on the call tonight with an awesome chiropractor, Dr. Robert Brooks. And we're very happy to have you here with us. We're going to be muting the call now so that we can have the best quality of call. So if you just hold on for a second. Okay. Well, again, good evening, everyone, and I am happy to be introducing and speaking with Dr. Robert Brooks, who is truly a chiropractic warrior, and I've been having a great time getting to know him this evening. I'm going to give you a brief overview of his resume. If I read the whole thing, it would take a good part of the call, but he is a graduate of Palmer College in 1970, and has worked in his practices in Oklahoma from the early 70s. In 72 to 87, he ran two offices there, and since 88, his practice has been Brooks Spinal Care in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the University Club Towers. He's has honorary degrees from Life College and Sherman College, and has served his alma mater, Palmer, in many different ways, been very involved in the Alumni Association, and he's also been involved with Delta Sigma Chi fraternity, involved with the ICA on many different levels, and has been involved with the upper cervical, NUCA, and many different organizations within the upper cervical community. And again, one of the great things that I've seen about him is that he has sent over 54 of his patients to chiropractic college, has coached 57 interns to prepare them for their own practices, which is really giving back. And he has a seminar company, Taking Care of People, where he teaches chiropractors and chiropractic students communication and relationship skills. And that's just to name a few things. Tonight, Dr. Brooks is going to talk to us about the future of chiropractic. And I will stop talking now and say hi, Dr. Robert Brooks.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Kim Stessel. It's really great to be with you this evening, and I want to thank you and Dr. Knowles and the Sherman community for inviting me to participate in the Sherman Connect.
Well, we appreciate having you with us and sharing with our community. So, you know, before we get into the meat, which I know there's going to be just a ton of content tonight, why don't you share with our audience your journey in chiropractic, what got you in, and some of the highlights that led you to where you're at today?
Well, I will go through some of the 50-some years then with you as briefly as I can. Mm-hmm. I turned 17 in April. Graduated high school in May, was off to college to be a mathematician until I ran into a chiropractor in June, and he told me about a power of life inside the human body that stops when we die, and when the spine's injured and misaligned, it limits that power, and people have problems and get sick, and when you correct the spine, life returns. Mm-hmm. And I just got it in that moment, and I said, that's what I'm going to do with my life. So by September of 1963, I was on my way to Palmer College in Davenport, Iowa. So I went to Palmer for 2 years. Oklahoma passed the legislation that you had to have some background in pre-med or liberal arts before you could get a license in the state. And so if I had planned to return home, I came back to University of Tulsa 2 years, went back to Palmer and graduated in 1970. So from the time I graduated, I'd always been really powerfully attracted to this notion of removing interference from life, of the misalignment of the spine interfering with nerve transmission and causing problems in the body. So by 1971, I had spent a year traveling. I opened my first practice. I was in a in a downtown area without good parking, without much utilization, and basically lasted 9 months in my first office and closed it. And a good friend of mine from Mississippi suggested I go to the DE seminar in Atlanta. So off I went to DE. I came home. I packed up my equipment, moved to the small town of Tahlequah, Oklahoma, a town of 30,000 people, the market area about 100,000. There was a college there. It's the capital of the Cherokee Nation. And at one time, it was the hometown of David Letterman. So I had cowboys and Indians, hillbillies, and students and professors. So it was an interesting place
to
practice.
That's an eclectic mix.
Yeah, so within what I did is I put a quarter-page picture of myself in the local newspaper that came out weekly. I saw 10 new patients my first day. Within 30 days, I was seeing 100 people a day. And within 60 days, I was seeing over 150 people a day. I continued doing that at around 200 patient visits a day for the next 3 years. At that point, I had been adjusting the spine pretty much one bone at a time, segmentally, but I'd been laying awake at night reading the green books. And from reading the green books, I had an idea that there may be a better way to do this. So on December the 5th, 1975, I turned around at the end of the day. I saw 168 patients, locked the door, and walked away. In 1979, I had taken 42 technique courses, and by that time, I'd become upper cervical by commitment. So,
wow. Now let me just back up a little bit. So you were practicing, have this booming practice. You closed the door to your office and then just went out and started studying techniques?
Yes, and then eventually I sold my XJ6 Jaguar, bought a Volkswagen, and opened another small office in a building that was 18 by 24 feet. And, within a very short time, I was seeing about 40 people a day. And then after about 3 months of that, rented a bigger space and put in some x-ray equipment and started doing a whole new practice style of taking x-rays. So I have a history, Kim, of taking these classes at a time where I took Blair from Bill Blair. I took Nuka from Ralph Gregory. I took Pettibone from Ralph Pettibone. I took Van Rump from Van Rump. I took A.K. from George Goodhart. I mean, if you just go right down the line about who developed the procedures, I took the course from the person that developed that procedure. Of course, including Michael Cable, that's been influential in the knee chest work in the South. So now moving forward, what I wound up with was taking pre- and post-x-rays and the orthogonal perspective of the NUCA procedure. And I was doing that by 1980. By 1984, I had really identified that there, this is a way that I could not just believe in what I do, but actually know what I do on a patient-by-patient basis. So in 1984, I started going to chiropractic colleges and lecturing to students and trying to encourage them to take a look at all the different procedures. And I'm one of those people that if we had time, I would go through the evolution of chiropractic procedures and tell you how every one of them works. And every one of them helps people.
Right.
From D.D. Palmer's energy work, to segmental, to approximation, to majors and minors, to thermography. I mean, we could go right down the line. And every one of those have been evolutionary stages or steps in what we know today about the spinal misalignment and how to correct it. So now, fast forward, I'm starting to take a look at, and I've got to tell you this story because this is a Sherman Connect call.
Right.
There were times in the late 70s when I was searching everywhere for just about everything. I was sitting in the brownstone building that was originally Sherman in Spartanburg, South Carolina, under the stairs on a bench with Lyle Sherman. And I said to Lyle Sherman, I said, Lyle, I said, why do you think it is that the public hasn't completely accepted what we do as chiropractors? And his answer was very clear and very, very fast. He says, we have failed to honor the intelligence of the average person. And that just hit me on the forehead. So what I started doing in 1984 in my own practice was I started asking every patient on every patient visit, are there any questions? And what I learned over the next 5 years was that basically the very same questions arise in every patient's mind about what we do. And our failure to answer any one of them leaves that patient in the unknown. And if you leave a patient in the unknown, they will eventually not know what to do to relate to chiropractic or to have you take care of them. So I was also becoming active in Chiropractic Association of Oklahoma, Oklahoma Chiropractic Research Foundation. So I began more or less a career in some of the chiropractic politics. I made contributions to Sherman College and Life College when they were getting off the ground, before they'd even had the first student matriculated. At one point, I'd been asked to be the director of clinics for Sherman. Tom Gilardi had actually flown out to Tulsa to ask me to do that at a time when Guy Reichman and Joe Felicia and Reggie Gold were all there in the height of a philosophical time. So now, again, fast forward into the 90s, I've become involved in the board of directors of NUCA, the Upper Cervical Research Foundation, and have, you and I talked about this earlier, by now I have actually been the president or the chairman of the board of 8 different national chiropractic organizations. I have a background in parliamentary procedure and Robert's Rules of Order, as well as storyboard planning, and I've done planning sessions and authored 14 sets of nonprofit bylaws for chiropractic organizations. So, again, that's kind of that'll bring us up into the 90s. In the 90s, I thought, well, you know, I've got to start to introduce these ideas, these concepts on how to communicate what we do to chiropractors. And I thought, well, I'll start with the students. So by the mid-90s, I was already in the colleges talking to students about how to communicate to their patients. And, of course, one of the students that was there in the late 80s was Peter Kevorkian, now the president of your board of trustees, Richard Sherman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Peter and I have been friends ever since his time at Palmer. So into the 2000s, again, my practice just continued to grow and expand, and lots of people made the decision to go off and be chiropractors. In my opinion, it was just because they really were able to get it or to understand what it is that we do. And so from 1996 until now, I've had a seminar company teaching those communication and relationship skills to chiropractors and chiropractic students. And I've had over 2,000 people go through that program as well. And the biggest compliment I get from that is I use your material every single day. So to answer those questions that arise in people's minds, we actually identified 11 different contexts. And a context is kind of a picture. So if someone says to me, how bad is it, doc? I need to not say, well, it's not too bad. What I need to say is, misalignments are either small and simple, big and simple, they're small with a complication, big with a complication, or very complicated. The good news is, yours is simple and medium. So now that answer has a place to land in the mind of that patient. So in the Taking Care of People programs, again, now with 11 contexts to answer those questions, I've had a lot of people have a tremendous amount of success in doing that. So that kind of brings us up to where we are now. I've made the inaugural meeting with the upper cervical techniques that Jerry Klum put together in 2007. And out of that meeting, over a number of years, we've created the Upper Cervical Council that's responsible for the Diplomate program and upper cervical care. And I'm currently still the chairman of the board of the Upper Cervical Council of the ICA. So that'll kind of give you some background and a little bit of who I am. And I told you earlier, my preference is to interact. So,
right.
And if you can just take all of that and say, okay, what do you want to know out of that?
My head's kind of spinning as to where to begin. But one of the things that jumped out and thinking about your call and knowing that you talk to people, I mean. Or that you help to teach chiropractors how to communicate with their patients. And patient communication and understanding is so important. And I know, you know, in the profession, so much is made of the first couple of visits, and you have to teach them what we do. But it's the ongoing, everyday communication that really helps to solidify a patient's understanding and knowledge. And you just talked about that a little bit with, you know, asking them every day about the questions that they have. So if you could go into that a little bit, I think that would be really helpful for people.
Okay, well, let me do it this way for you. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce you to the five questions.
Okay.
Now, these are five questions that you're going to need to answer as a chiropractor or as a chiropractic student, or if you're a chiropractic advocate and you want to communicate who we are and how people can integrate it into their lives. Question one, can you help me? Most people just want to know if we can help them. And they start there. And so it's a very tricky question because we don't know the answer to that question until someone gets under care. And let me give you an example of a context to answer that question. There are things that are caused by the spine and its misalignment and its effect on the nerves and the function of the body. There are things that are associated with it that are going to get better but won't go away until something else is addressed. And then there are things that are not related at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I will pay attention to in taking care of you is I will pay attention to the things that are caused by, associated with, or not related. And I will let you know as we go through this process what I'm able to do to help you. So question number one was, can I help you?
Can you help? But that is a tricky question because as a chiropractor, you know that if you're removing nerve interference, you can help them. But that's not what the patient's really asking you.
How many people walk into your front door and say, would you remove my interference, please?
I haven't had too many. Even the ones who are coming from other chiropractors and think they want wellness aren't asking that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I'm going to kind of broaden this conversation a smidge before I go to question two. There are two different philosophies in healthcare and life in general. I'm going to call one of them non-interference and the other one intervention. Non-interference says you come fundamentally perfect. You have the ability to heal and recover from almost anything and adapt to anything you can't heal and recover from, and you have the ability to make your own decisions because of the wisdom you have inside of yourself. You don't really need any help. You just need no interference.
Right.
Now, the contrast to that is intervention. Intervention says you're going to come fundamentally flawed. You're going to have things come up in your life you're not able to heal and recover from, nor even adapt to. And you're not wise enough to make your own decisions. We need to find out what's going on in your body through all these diagnostic tests to know what you need. Now, quite frankly, those of us as chiropractors, we hear that intervention thing, and it makes the hair stand up on the back of our necks. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is both things are true. When I was 7 years old, my next-door neighbor gave me a box of 200 pieces of double-barrel bubble gum. By the time I'm 10, I have 20 cavities, okay? it's necessary for me to get to somebody to get the cavities taken care of, I'm going to lose all my teeth.
Right.
It's too late to go back and get rid of the bubble gum. Follow that?
Mm-hmm.
So both things are true, and the path of least resistance, because quite frankly, what our culture wants and what they're conditioned to is intervention. Most people are going to walk through your front door wanting intervention.
Right.
They want help for a problem. So question one, can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, question two, and this is where you get to talk about the subluxation. You get to answer the question, what is it? Okay? And however you are able to communicate what that subluxation is, or subluxated spine, or atlas subluxation complex, whatever that is, what is it? You need to have a very clear way to communicate to people. Question number three, do I have it? And when you answer question number three with do I have it, you know, whether it's an x-ray, whether it's a postural measurement, whether it's palpation, makes no difference, but you have to let the person know they have it. Question number four is, how's it affecting me? And so we need to be able to know the distribution of nerves and which symptoms are going to be associated, which are going to be caused by, which are going to be related to. So that when you do your intake and you get a history, you should have a pretty good idea of what's related to the nervous system. Question number five is, what do I need to do to take care of it? And so if you're able to answer all five of those questions in your practice in a way that does not leave the patient in the unknown, then you're going to be very successful with that patient and having them stay for long periods of time. All of us are able to attract a certain number of people that stay with us for a long time. But all of us also lose people along the way.
Right.
In my opinion, it's because we haven't been able to take those people out of the unknown to where they know what they need to do to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So does that help on the... Do you remember your question?
Yeah, the question, well, yes. That was part of it. These are the things that they need to know. And are these, you know, like... You said that, are there questions if you ask people, you know, every time that they come in, do you have any questions? And when you do that, you answer it, and these are the basic questions that they're looking for. They might be couched other ways, but that if they keep having questions, then one of these five questions haven't been completely answered. Is that what you're basically saying?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another thing, too, that there is a thing called the Dictionary of Cultural Literacy, and those are the words that people can understand and share with another person.
Right.
And when you answer these questions, you need to be speaking into that listening. So it's real important to learn how to actually speak into the listening of the people you take care of. And I distinguish that between patient education and patient learning. If someone makes an appropriate decision and does an appropriate behavior, they learned.
Hmm.
If you tell them and tell them and tell them and tell them, and they don't do anything different, they haven't learned anything.
Right.
And so it really needs to be patient learning, not patient education.
Right. Now, how much, you know, I know that depends on the skill of a chiropractor and their ability to communicate, but I mean, it also depends on the individual and their ability to hear and learn and where they're coming from. Correct? Or
to
do you
some
think
degree,
that you can pretty much shift anybody?
I'm in that school where you can pretty much reach anyone. And again, the key to success is when you start saying, are there any questions on every patient encounter, what you're going to do is they're going to teach you how to actually answer those questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems in chiropractic is that we think we already know how to answer them. But the way we're answering them may or may not go across to the person that we're giving the answer to.
Right.
And your patients will teach you how to answer the questions. And, it, you know, does it take more time to do that? In the beginning, it does. But then after a period of time, it is so simple. It's like all of us have an innate awareness. You aware of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A lot of people don't know to follow their innate awareness. Nobody's ever given them permission. So if I say to you, Kim, your body is smarter than I am, and I'm smart enough to know it.
Right.
See how that empowers both of us?
Right.
Takes nothing away from me and gives you the opportunity to listen to your own infinite wisdom, to take care of yourself. And that's a part of that non-interference philosophy that's so inherent in chiropractic.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
I can go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I can remember another story where I had a young man. He was probably 14, maybe 15, starting to play football, and of course his mother's freaked. She just can't imagine, you know, this kid getting hurt and it affecting the rest of his life. And she brings him in, and, you know, because now he did have an injury playing ball. And she brings him in to have him checked out. And just going through the process of the history and the exam, you know, you could see that her intent was clear, that he'd never get on the football field again.
Hmm.
And so I looked over to the kid, and I told him, I said, I want you to repeat after me. It's my body. And when he said, it's my body, that was probably the first time he took ownership of his own body.
Right.
And wasn't giving that away to someone else.
Right.
But again, it's these tiny little things that we can do that empower people to take care of themselves, to make appropriate decisions, to learn what it is that we all have to offer them. It's just, it's a beautiful thing, but it's sometimes those tiny little things. And, you know, again, we've got to be prepared for this, because we're living in a culture that's still not ready for the message of non-interference.
Right.
The
yeah,
three
I was going to ask
of,
you about that. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The three enemies of progress are ignorance, prejudice, and superstition. People just don't know, or they believe something that's not true, you know, or they think that as a chiropractor you're not a real doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So there are times if you have a commitment to the founding principles of a chiropractic and you have a commitment to providing people an understanding of non-interference as a way to live out of their own innate awareness, then you've got to be prepared to be disappointed, frustrated, humbled, and even conditioned to learn to understand the position of culture. Because we can't take away intervention. What we have to do is add non-interference to it. It's what's missing.
Mm.
And so every time we make intervention wrong, we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
Right. Right. So always putting down the drugs and the other things, we just need to shift and show them that there is another way to look at it. And if they begin to look at that, then they're going to be less likely to look at the other things. That's what you're saying?
It is. And so, and again, from, you know, taking care of people and observing, like none of us go to school to be bartenders. We go to school to take care of people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. But one of the things that occurred after creating context to answer all these questions is I began to notice that people develop into lifetime patients through stages.
Mm-hmm.
And stage one is they come in and either believe we can help them or they believe that we cannot. So faith is the first stage of development. And then once they become a patient and they get, you know, they get some relief, now they're no longer functioning in faith. I know there's something to this. And relief is stage two. Now, almost all chiropractic procedures are going to provide relief relatively quickly. There are some conditions that don't, but almost all of us have that experience. Stage three, however, is recovery. And there's a lot of information on this, but it takes approximately 1 month to recover for every year of the spines are misaligned. And Kim, you've been in practice long enough to see this.
Right.
If you see somebody under care 2, 3, 4 years, and they're a different person. They're like over it.
Right.
They're not just coming to you for relief. And stage four is awareness of the requirements of wellness. So now that life is starting to come back on and come back to fruition, people start asking questions about, you know, I'm feeling so much better. What kind of exercise should I do? What do you recommend nutritionally? You know, so now they're looking for other things they need to do to take care of themselves. Then stage five is a very interesting stage because somebody's been under care for a while, and all of a sudden the spine misaligns again and life goes down. And for the very first time, that person has a direct experience of intelligence, force, and matter, this power of life that we have inside. And from that power of life we have inside, when it diminishes just slightly, and then the person comes in and gets adjusted again, and that power of life comes back on, that's stage five and six. That's principle of the power of aliveness and principle of interference. And that direct physical experience is the first time that a person can actually understand the non-interference philosophy in our practices. Stage seven is they not only keep their spine corrected, anything else in their life that interferes with their life goes. They get rid of all kinds of things. See relationships change, people change jobs, careers. They change and they stop doing the things that aren't working.
Right.
Those stages of development of lifetime patients also can be addressed in terms of how you communicate to people. And you even mentioned this earlier. As people go through care, you know, what you say to them may need to change.
Mm-hmm.
And it does.
Right.
Because you can't have a stage five conversation with a stage two patient. They can't hear you.
Mm-hmm. And right, the paradigm isn't ready for that.
Yeah, and if you try to have a stage two conversation with a stage five person, it's like an insult.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's so much great information here. I want to get on to students in a minute, but I have to take a couple of minutes to do some brief commercials for Sherman. You know, thank you to all who are listening tonight, and we appreciate you supporting Sherman and the college. If you have, like Dr. Brooks, if you're turning people on to chiropractic and are interested in what's going on at Sherman College, there's awesome things happening at Sherman College. We're in the middle of a great expansion, and the school is doing wonderfully. The education is top notch, and our campus is, by the end of this year, is just going to be first rate. So if you're interested in sending students to Sherman College, you should send them to a Sherman Showcase weekend. We have them once every quarter. The weekend scheduled for 2018 are February 9th and 10th, August 3rd and 4th, and November 2nd and 3rd. And at the Showcase weekend, the students will be treated to stay down there and given some support in getting to the school, but they'll have a welcome session, leadership experiences so they can prepared to be confident leaders and effective. They'll demonstrate palpation. They'll have a campus tour. They'll get to see Spartanburg Living. So if you're interested, if you have some students who are thinking about chiropractic care, then you should contact Sherman College, Emily Wood, or go to our website at sherman.edu/showcase. And the next thing is our Sherman Lyceum, Constructing the Future, which will be May 3rd through 5th. And it's going to be an awesome, awesome weekend with more than 30 speakers and lots of CE. It's going to be at the Spartanburg Marriott this year because we are in the middle of construction. So that'll be different, but it, as always, there's something special about Sherman Lyceum. So so back to Dr. Brooks. You know, we talked earlier, my son is just graduating. Actually, you mentioned Dr. Kevorkian. He's doing his externship with Dr. Peter and Dr. Patty right now. We're thrilled that he's getting that experience up there. And I have a daughter in school. So, you know, the students, besides the students that I've sent to school, students and where they're at is very close to my heart right now. So, you know, speaking to students as they're getting out, they've just been through this grueling educational process, and because of the requirements of the national boards and everything else that, you know, our chiropractic politics has made them learn, you know, they get scared, and they're not necessarily in the most positive state about how to go and approach people. What do you suggest to the students to get out there so that they can, you know, be strong in their philosophy and in their approach to chiropractic and really make a difference with their patients?
Again, while you're a student in school, number one, begin to hone those communication skills. Learn how to talk to people about chiropractic and what benefit it has in their lives. And there are some very, very effective ways to do that. So communicating what we do is number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two is, and we haven't really talked much about this evening, but, you know, relationship skills. I can mess up a relationship pretty easily. And if you're going to have a lifetime patient, one of the things you need is you need the relationship skills not to screw up that relationship. So
right.
I would say both of those things are going to be really significant. To me, there's a piece for the student, though, about, you know, as you're going through the process, you're going through the academic process, don't forget for a moment that what you came to do school to do was to take care of people, to actually have someone come to you, put their trust and faith in you, and this, and just like if you were holding out your hands, they would be offering you their love and their beauty and their kindness, and they're going to ask you to hold that for them. And so if you can get in that way that what we are is we're actually sacred keepers of the innates of the patients that we take care of, and recognize that that innate is trying to be fully expressed and do the very best you can to find a way to get the interference away from it. You want people to be asking you, what caused this, not what do I do to treat it? When people start saying, where does it come from, rather than what do I need to do to treat it, then you're going to have been successful in that question number five, what I need to do to take care of it. So the other thing that I would be very cautious about as a student, and it's probably going to be some people on this call that don't like this, but the economics of practice are huge for a student. You're going to go through school, you're going to have an incredible amount of student debt or student loans, and it's going to be up to you to go out there and open a practice and repay that money. Now, I've been fortunate enough to be the chairman of a task force to evaluate the clinical education of a chiropractor, and I've had people who were presidents of chiropractic colleges, people who were heads of accreditation agencies, and what we did is we went from the student-patient experience to the student's experience to the staff and faculty experience in the clinics to the administrators over that clinic. We went all the way through that, and there was a thing that came out of it, and that is that chiropractic colleges can't be for-profit. And what's happening is if part of your tuition money is paying for patient care, you are being trained that to set your fees below what you have to set them in order to make a living and survive. So I'd be very careful with the economics of practice in that sense of finding a way to make sure everything is going to work for you. Because if you're going to set your fees based on a sense of self-worth, you haven't been given that sense of how much what we do to help people is truly worth.
Mm-hmm.
So economics is another big issue. And the people that I've coached through the years, that one almost always shows up in the beginning. It's like, what are my fees going to be? How much am I going to charge? Am I going to do care plans? And as a student, when you first get out of school and start seeing patients and adjust someone, if somebody gets better, you're going to go, yahoo. And if somebody gets worse, you're going to go, oh, my God. And so your ego is going to ride a roller coaster for a while as you do that. But you need to get, it's not the results you get paid for. What you get paid for is the service you provide. And so make sure that you have services you provide and the fees for those services, because that will really, really help you. And again, the last thing is being very clear about intervention and non-interference. And I'm just going to say this, and again, this makes a lot of people uncomfortable when I bring it up. Intervention will not go away. For those of us that are non-interference people, we would have loved for it to go away. I've been in this profession more than 50 years. It's been here since I got here. It's going to be here as long as I'm in the profession, because intervention works. You know, you can diagnose and treat patients' problems, and they do get help from doing it. Now, is that finding the cause of the problem and correcting it? No, it isn't. But you need to realize that in the first 5 years of practice, if you take the path of least resistance that makes men and rivers crooked, you will begin to practice intervention in some form.
Mm.
And so you need a really strong commitment to removing interference from that person's life and keeping that interference removed for as long as that person lives. So the other thing, and I'll just say this, and again, you've asked me to speak to students, the future really is ours to be a part of, and you need to be clear about what you're going to do every day. How many people can you see? How many people can you adjust? Is there a limit? And when you reach that place, that pinnacle, can you take it to the next level and the next level and the next level? So you're going to be setting the standard for excellence in patient care, patient management, patient learning, and public learning. You're going to correct the spines of your patients, keep them corrected for as long as they live. You're going to have to constantly reach out to people to tell them about the benefits of lifetime spinal care and convert them to patients. And as much as you can, live a life of non-interference and provide the context and the environment for other people to choose the same. Because those are acts of conviction, and those acts of conviction you will actually get quite a bit while you're in school. And taking care of people and doing really, really good patient care is not exclusive of making money. Both can exist simultaneously.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's really, and now you talked about, you know, having that commitment, and it's keeping that commitment in the face of a public who doesn't necessarily understand us and challenges that we face. You know, students get out of school and they're idealistic and dreamy-eyed, and as people get into practice for a while and, you know, life can tend to beach up or beach down, things happen. How do you recommend the chiropractors to stay focused and stay the course through life's up and downs?
Again, I'm just going to repeat myself, but what you want to do is you want to not get rid of interference, of intervention in people's lives. What you want to do is you want to add non-interference.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're effective at adding non-interference, that means people will come to you, regardless of what's going on with them, to ask you, by the time I've been in practice 25 years, I would have someone diagnosed with cancer, and they'd come to me and ask me what I thought they should do. And it wasn't because, the truth is, I help people find their answers. I don't have them for them. And again, using that non-interference philosophy, You've got to help people find their own answers. You know, once you're brilliant, educated, thinks it has all the answers, you're not going to live a very happy life.
Mm-hmm. Right. That is pretty limiting. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one of the things that we've talked about, and from looking at your resume, when you and I were talking on the phone, we were talking about, you know, our involvement in the profession. And for somebody who's given and done so much and involved in so many aspects of the profession, I'd love for you to touch a little bit on the importance of getting involved outside of your own practice in the chiropractic profession.
Well, I'm going to probably play a little bit more with this than I have up to now. But any time two or more are gathered in my name, it's political.
Hmm.
And so you've got to get it that life is political. You may not like it, but it is. And so all of us didn't come as political animals. And you basically have to learn to be one. And so there are opportunities for us to move our beloved profession forward by assuming leadership positions, whether it's at the state level, whether it's at the national level, whether it's with your technique group, whether it's supporting your college or institution. But there are lots of places that need people to step up. And I'm one of those people that, quite frankly, has seen over and over and over that the collective makes a better decision than the individual in most cases. So functioning on a board of directors, learning how to function on a board of directors. The founding principle of Robert's Rules of Order is that everyone has an equal voice. And so if you're in an organization, everyone needs to have an equal voice. And you also need to learn from B.J. Palmer's book, Conflicts Clarify. Because if there is a conflict within a group or an organization, it usually means one of two things. It either means truth hasn't shown up, or someone is making someone else wrong. And sometimes you have to wait until the truth shows up, no matter how agonizing it is. But every time you wait and a truth shows up, then things get better. I also have another piece of that that has helped me through the years, and I'm going to kind of go into this part of it in terms of organizational work. But a lot of organizational work is learning to trust your innate. And learning to trust your innate, and now don't get me wrong, a mind is a terrible thing to waste, but the pathway to greatness really is surrendering to that innate. And one of the ways that we have deluded ourselves in the past is innate is powerful, and the educated is forceful. And so intelligence, force, and matter should probably be intelligence, power, and matter. Innate is quiet, still, powerful, just sitting there like gravity affecting all things. You can't see it, smell it, taste it. And innate is the same way. And one of the things I love to say about living an innate life is, are you able to put yourself in second position? Can you take that ego, which is the operating system of the educated, and allow it to give way to innate? And that doesn't mean that, you know, we wait 10 years for innate to give us the next message. It just means that we check in and see what's true to us and live out of our own truth, no matter what that is. And in an organization, sometimes the organization will take a turn that may not be true to you. And you have a choice to stay with the organization. And one of the things that I've learned to do is to just outlive them or outlast them until things come back around again.
Uh-huh. Well, because chiropractic politics, like any other politics, isn't always the easiest to deal with. And so that's what you're talking about now is great advice, is just staying with it for the bigger idea and for the bigger picture, and not letting the ego get in the way.
Well, and not letting the educated get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I love the idea that the ego is the iOS 12.2 is the operating system of the educated. Its job is my survival. Its job is figuring things out. Its job is managing the information that I can get from the outside world. The problem is it has a very limited ability. On a sensory level, I'm taking in 80% of my experience is sensory. Only 1-3% is cognitive. So guess which one of those I should be listening to? And I'm not talking about the airy-fairy philosophy of the 1960s, where if it feels good, do it. That's not it.
Right.
But to learn what is true to you and to follow that truth regardless. Because the innate is all-wise, all-knowing, all-powerful. And to think that my educated is stronger than that is deluding myself.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways I love saying it is, if it's between God's will and Bob's will, Bob does not win that one. And so sometimes it's necessary just to turn that over. But to be involved in a group or an organization, it's necessary to be willing to sit with the group, because the collective has a collective innate, just like individuals have an individual innate. And a lot of times the greatest, most profound truth idea or thing that's going to move our profession the fastest comes from that innocent person that you would never expect it to come from.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it happen over and over and over again.
Right.
But
right.
Taking leadership positions, study leadership. Leadership really is representing the people. At least that's the way it's designed. There are some examples in the world today not like that, but leadership essentially is representing the people and learning to represent the people. And I'll give you some principles. Never go to a meeting without an agenda.
Mm-hmm. So you have a point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so someone needs to be chairing those meetings and needs to be keeping track of what the meeting is for, what decisions need to be made, who needs to make those decisions, and then also have an organizational structure or architecture that supports the outcomes you want the organization to have. I've seen so many organizations that have inadequate organizational structures to where they've got like three committees and they've got 12 different areas that they're trying to manage.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good strategy.
Right.
So, again, organizational work needs to be leadership-oriented. It definitely needs to be organized. And I always love to think of it as the human body were not organized. If it didn't have all these glands and tissues and organs, we wouldn't be alive. We couldn't function. And organizations are the same way. They need to be organized. The better organized they are, the better they're going to function. Now, let's talk about the other side. Let's talk about the payoffs. One of the payoffs are taking a leadership position in chiropractic. And I'm just going to say this as cleanly as I can. In all of us, I really believe there's a place where we want to make a difference, where we want to make a contribution. And sometimes we can make a bigger contribution in an organization than we can as an individual. And so finding those organizations that we would like to support, that call to us, just like I was called into chiropractic. I've essentially been led most of my career into one place after another innately. And I'd like to say, before I got into chiropractic, I had it all figured out and knew exactly where I was going, what I was going to do. Not the way it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to know whether to say, aye, aye, captain, or that's not true to me.
Right, right,
yeah.
Right. By listening to that voice inside.
that the payoffs are huge in terms of your ability to make a contribution, to make a difference, to get something done. They're not always huge financially, but they're always huge in terms of personal development and personal growth.
Right, right. Well,
okay, so I'm going to do just a real quick. I really want to make sure that our message of chiropractic survives. You know, I've had a long and full chiropractic career, and I just want to reuse this word. I want us to be able to integrate chiropractic into our culture and society. I don't think we need to make it separate and distinct as much as we need to integrate it. We need to get people understanding that there's times that intervention is necessary and there's times that non-interference is necessary, but what's missing in our culture are people that have the wisdom to choose non-interference.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a powerful opportunity to integrate our message into the world. And this is, again, my close. Our time really is coming. The future is ours to make. Are you ready?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time tonight, for your years of dedication to the profession, for sharing your knowledge, and for your desire to make sure that it gets out and this wonderful thing that we love called chiropractic is perpetuated and thrives. So, you know, you really are an example of somebody who gives and loves and serves and has made a big difference in the profession. And I'm really glad to have a chance to get to know you tonight. And I know that, you know, it's been a positive night for our listeners as well. So on behalf of the Board of Trustees and the team at Sherman College, thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to share some of my years of experience with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was great. And for all those on the call, please, you know, share about our Sherman Connect every Monday night at 9. And, you know, this call will be recorded so you can listen to it again. Share it with your friends. Be sure to come to Lyceum in May and send your students to the Sherman Connect, the Sherman Showcase weekends. And on behalf of the Board of Trustees, we thank you and have a great evening.